Welcome to A Girl's Eye View, where women share their personal experiences navigating the world of flight training and beyond. We're offering a fresh perspective on aviation with plenty of laughs, real talk, and the occasional, I can't believe I did that moment. Tune in for a fun, honest look at aviation from our point of view. I'm your host, Pam, with my co-hosts Rachel and Jen. Now, let's look at things from A Girl's Eye View. Welcome, everyone, to episode 3 of A Girl's Eye View. Today, we are going to talk about the F word, finances.
The worst F word.
Not a fun one.
No.
We've talked before about how flight training is particularly cost prohibitive for a lot of people. And that's really unfortunate. So we're just going to talk today about things that we've seen and try to make it a little bit more obvious and clearer as to the upfront costs and maybe the not so upfront costs that it takes to be a pilot. And so if you're a listener who doesn't have an aviation background, you might not know it, but there are several different types of pilot licenses. And so there's different stages of flight training. Today, we're mostly going to focus on the private pilot stage, but Rachel or Jen, would either one of you like to outline the different stages of flight training that are possible for people to take advantage of?
So like zero to like airline kind of deal, like what kind of ratings you're looking at? Okay. So everybody needs to get their PPL, their private pilot's license or certificate. Next would be your instrument rating, which means that you are able to fly in not so great weather. And then that would kind of be the it if this was just a hobby. Those would be the two that everybody kind of gets and stops at. In order to be paid to be a pilot, you then need to get your commercial pilot's license, which just is essentially your private pilot curriculum, but significantly narrow margins in terms of a pass fail. So like within 200 feet on private, it might be 100 feet on your commercial in terms of landing distance and such. Like we're from a point. From there, you have a lot of options. You may choose to get your CFI, which means that you can then teach people to fly airplanes. If you want to teach people to be instrument pilots, you need an additional rating, which would be your CFII. And then from there, you would get eventually your ATP-CTP, which is your airline transport pilot, I think is what the acronym is there. And that's that allows you to go to the airlines, whether it be a regional or something like Delta or American, that kind of stuff. You also will need to, within there somewhere, get your multi-engine rating. But once you have your commercial, it's kind of up to, one, your finances, and two, what your end goal is in terms of how you kind of go. Everybody gets their private, and then it's kind of like private instrument, and then everybody kind of scatters because there's so many other options and ratings. You get, there's a bunch of endorsements you can get. There's a bunch of fun ratings, like your tail wheel or your seaplane.
In theory, I want to do
so bad. In theory, you know, not necessarily. It's not necessary to go to the airlines to get that kind of a rating, but it might be fun to have. And it could actually lead to employment in terms of in places like Michigan on like the Great Lakes and that kind of stuff, doing like seaplane stuff there, or like the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, Maine has a huge seaplane
presence.
Yeah, presence. Yeah. That's the one. It's not that it's not a necessary rating. It's just not within the pipeline to get you from like zero to flying for one of the air carriers.
Yeah, that was a really good rundown. Pretty substantial.
There's a lot. And there's a lot of other ways that you can do it. Like, right, you get your MEI, or which is your multi-engine, but then you can be, or MEI would be your multi-engine instructor, but you need to have your multi-engine to get it. And then there's like multi-commercials. There's a whole bunch. It's very convoluted sometimes. Soup to nuts, that's kind of what you're looking at.
And you might think about getting an associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, a doctorate. There's a flow there.
Yeah.
It's similar, but if, as you hear these different words, certificate, license, rating, add-on, endorsement, these are all kind of, these are things that you can pursue in your training. And they either, you know, they qualify you for different planes or to get different jobs. So
that's a good point too, though, because you'll hear certificate and license used kind of interchangeably. Technically, it is a certificate, not a license. However, licenses sort of like it's kind of like a driver's license. Licenses sort of worked its way into the vernacular as opposed to calling it a certificate. So you will hear them used interchangeably, but technically it is a certificate.
And how pretentious are you if you correct somebody who says
Oh my God.
license?
Truly. Truly.
Like,
And people will. To which I just say license a million times. Suddenly every other word in my sentence becomes license. Oh, do you have a private license? You have your instrument license? Oh my gosh, are you commercially licensed pilot? Wild.
it's what's natural. And if you're somebody who wants to be super correct in your own vernacular, go for it. You don't
Oh
need to
yeah,
correct other
definitely.
people about it. I
Definitely.
think that's
And it's just
my.
it, I mention it only because like I know I definitely use them interchangeably, and I know that somewhere out there someone is grinding their teeth going, but it's a certificate. And
Oh, I get comments
I
all the
get it.
time on
I get
social
it.
media.
I think my personal favorite is when they say they're a certificated pilot. It's
Oh
just
yeah.
commercially certificated.
My
Okay,
guy,
good for
you can get
you.
paid to fly. Congratulations. You have a pilot's license.
Yeah. These are our
We have
pet
a whole
peeves,
episode
everyone.
about just this.
So there's lots of different stages of flight training. If you've been listening along with us, I am still a student pilot. I cannot get a check ride date. I'm waiting to get my private pilot certificate. And Jen and Rachel each are working on their instrument rating. When you guys think back to private, what are some of the startup costs that we can describe to people? Things, your initial costs that you'd have to consider when you start flight training.
Yeah, so I think some of the biggest initial costs that you're going to be looking at that are going to vary greatly where you are and what flight school you're at is the cost of a rental of the plane. Most flight schools nowadays, from what I've seen, are renting the airplanes wet, which means the gas is included in your rental fee. Sometimes you'll see a dry rental, but that tends to be more with like clubs and like ownership groups as opposed to like a straight up flight school. With the flight school, you also will get the instructor fee, and they typically both go by the hour. And most of those run off the tack time or Hobbs
We
number.
bill on the hobs, not the tack.
Okay. So,
But
yeah.
that sometimes is different by school too, which is weird. Ask them. That's a question, a good question to ask. How do they base, what do they base their billing on? Would be a great question to ask when you go to a flight school.
And so when you hear the words hobs and tack, there's a difference.
There is a difference.
Just know
Yeah, one
those
is
words.
engine time and one is like airframe time, basically, is what kind of how it works out. So like one is based on engine RPM and one is just sometimes it's time the engine's on, sometimes it's time the battery's on. It gets weird sometimes how it,
Well,
because like we had
they're
one
not the
plane that
same.
like if the master was on, so there's electricity, the meter was running, but if it was off, it was fine. But then we have other Cessnas who like you'd have to actually start the engine for the meter to actually kind of run.
So
Gets
we
weird.
had a problem years ago at my school that I've only heard about. It's like this,
It
you know,
is a legend.
legend. It's a legend that some of the students were turning off the alternator switch. So that they weren't getting billed on the tack. So now we bill on the hobs.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, if you're one of the people who did that, please write in and tell us about it. But
I have so many
yeah.
questions.
So Jen, can you continue?
Yeah, so I think another kind of upfront cost that you might have to consider is insurance. Some schools do require you to get and prove your insurance right away. My school currently has really good insurance and they cover us, so we aren't required to have individual renter's insurance unless you want it. That's kind of optional, but then maybe like a hidden cost, but it is an upfront cost, is going to be going and getting your medical because you're going to be required to have that to get through your training. I think they're around $100, but I've heard upwards of like 150, 200
I think it
for an
depends on
AME
class.
appointment.
So, and this is a good point to say that there are three classes of medical that you can get. Third, second, first. First is like airline pilots, cargo pilots, like people who fly regularly for work usually have a first class license. And we'll talk about it later, but like how much you spend is usually dependent on the class of license that you get. For private pilot, you need a third class, and that's it.
You can get the second or first, but
You can, yes.
you just need the third class.
Minimum, I guess, would be the better way to say that.
Right. Okay. So that's a big deal. So if you don't have a medical certificate, you're not going to go far. That's why a lot of times when people say, oh, I want to start flying, what should I do? A lot of times people say the first thing you should do is get checked out, see if you
100% get your
qualify
medical done.
for a medical. You might spend a ton of money on flight lessons and think, oh, yeah, I'll just get my medical. And then you find out you have a condition that disqualifies you from becoming a pilot.
Or a
So,
medication that you're taking that you can't. Yeah, it's you can do a discovery flight. You can even start if you really wanted to, but you need to have your medical to be able to solo. So it makes sense to do it first. Just check that box off, and then you don't have to worry about it because a third class medical is good for 60 calendar months or 5 years. So,
And then a student pilot certificate, right? You
yeah. But
How
that
much is
there's no
that?
cost associated with that.
You didn't have to pay for that?
No, you don't have to pay for your student pilot certificate.
I literally don't remember.
I don't recall doing it. I might have had to like pay for my instructor's time while we sat down and did it together.
Oh, you did it together?
Yeah. We just did it at the flight
Yeah,
school,
you do.
like
You have
after
to,
my
'cause they have to sign
lesson.
off on it still.
Oh, because
Yeah.
I did everything and my instructor just signed it.
Yeah.
I just logged
It's
into
basically
IACRA.
that's, yeah, exactly.
Okay. So that's a very interesting point. If you don't want to pay an instructor, you can just fill everything out in IACRA, which is an online portal.
A
A wormhole.
kind of where you do everything. So like whenever you're ready for a check ride, you go into IACRA and you do the whole thing and you get
Okay.
we could do a
And
whole episode just on IACRA.
we probably will. And you could fill that out and then ask your instructor, will you
You
please log
could.
into
I would
IACRA?
caution though, because sometimes that's part of your initial lesson with your instructor. Like that's just the flight school's flow. Any paperwork you haven't filled out, you have to do a TSA endorsement, which says that like they've checked your either birth certificate, like basically like an I-9 kind of thing where they check like your driver's license or your passport or something that says you are who you say you are a citizen of the United States. They sign off on it. So a lot of flight schools have just made it a part of that first initial lesson. But then there are some who don't do it until they're almost at the point where they're ready to solo you. You can do it by yourself, but just be in contact with whoever your instructor is before you just go rogue and kind of like, oh, I'm gonna do this.
So don't do what I did, everybody.
No, I honestly, you can 100%. Just check with your instructor before you like submit.
One other thing I wanted to add for cost that I personally didn't have to do, but if English is not your first language, you do have to take a written or oral test proving that you are at a proficient level of English. And I don't know the cost associated with that. You're gonna have to look into that, but that's definitely something to consider too.
I
Because
didn't
if
know
your
that.
English isn't at a certain level, you can't legally be a pilot in the United States.
You can imagine how important it is to be able to speak the language. English is the language of aviation at this point. But in terms of proficiency, I think Jen was the word that you used, which is a really good one. I mean, you have to be fluent, right? So, there's a lot of things going on in the airplane, and you have to use some standardized language, which I love talking about that. Standardized language when you're talking over the radios to other planes or air traffic control. And so, yeah, that's a really big deal that we won't get too much into now. But Jen, that's a really good point. So the eligibility requirements, according to CFR 61-103, be able to read, speak, write, and understand the English language. So,
I think when you're filling out your application, you have to write if English is your first language. And so maybe if you don't check that, they make you take the TOEFL.
Jen, that was a really good start when we think about the money that we would need to begin flight training. Rachel, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I don't think so. I think just, as we talked about last week, you would have already shopped around for the flight school that is most cost effective for you. Those are the really good upfront costs for sure.
So when we talk about managing that money, so unless you have unlimited money growing on a tree somewhere in your
Printing
magical
it in the
yard.
basement.
Okay, we're in the basement. What's magical? I guess it could be anywhere. I mean, some people, like, you're gonna throw a ton of money at this thing. You don't want to just do what Some of us do, which is, you know,
Wing it.
just literally like show up to the school for a lesson, bibbidi bobbidi boo. And then, you know, you're like, what does my credit card state? You could try swiping that. Sure, go ahead.
Fingers crossed.
And one of the ways that I tried to manage my money while in my flight training was I found a 0% interest credit card because I didn't have money to put down initially on my training. And so I found the one that had the longest offer. It was 15 months. Put my lessons on that, and it's not accruing interest. So that's one thing that you could think about.
Definitely. There's also, so there's a lot of required reading that you would have to do as part of your ground school stuff. And I like to have physical copies because I like to touch it and be able to like flip through it. But every FAA publication is available for free on the FAA website. So that is also a cost saving measure in that you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars on essentially textbooks. You can just get the PDF right on the FAA website, which is also drop in the bucket, but it is something. So that's something else too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And why wouldn't we, you know, you have to make every dollar count.
And this
Absolutely.
one, so the other thing is that's useful and that could save you some money, but that's not necessarily like feasible for everybody is the quicker that you can get it done and the more you can fly when you're trying to get your PPL, the less money you're going to spend because it's a perishable skill. And if you put a lot of time between your lessons, there's going to naturally just be some regression because it's new. You haven't done it a lot. There's no muscle memory, all of those things, right? If you're only flying on weekends or every other week or when you can cobble together whatever the $300 for the lesson is or whatever it is, once you factor the plane and the instructor and the amount of time you're actually in the air, there's going to be some reteaching where you have to review some of the stuff that you've already done. And it's natural. Everybody has to do it. It is a new skill, right? But if you can fly 4 times a week, like whatever it works out to, the more you can fly, the less you will spend in the long run because you're able to build up that skill and practice it before you have to kind of reteach yourself, before that regression kind of happens. So if you're able, save up a little and then start. But that's, again, it's totally not feasible for everybody. So, and I flew every weekend twice. I flew Saturday, Sundays. So I get it.
I just realized too, when we were talking about this, I don't think we haven't put actual numbers out into what like flight training
Oh,
is. I
right.
can't remember actually saying
My
any,
little
so I'm just gonna, yeah,
spreadsheet.
use the spreadsheet. So the minimum requirements for getting your private pilot's license are 40 hours. The national average is creeping towards like 70 or 80
Yeah, but that's
hours.
40 hours of flight training. There's also
Yes.
mandatory instruction time plus your ground school stuff.
Yes. So we live all in like the Massachusetts, roughly Boston area. And we kind of did a little bit of research into what flight schools are currently charging for a range of planes from a Cessna 150 up through like an Arrow, Archer, some of the stuff that you might be doing a little bit more complex in. And they're ranging anywhere from $145 an hour to $205 an hour. And it seems like instruction is roughly $80 to $100 an hour. So you're looking at probably 280
And to be
an
clear,
hour
yeah,
for your lessons.
we ran into this a couple times. People would call in and they say, I was expecting $174 an hour for my flight lesson without realizing that it's 174 for the airplane an hour plus 80 an hour for the instructor. So really, you're up over $200 an hour with both.
And so when you're considering your flight training, roughly 70, 80 hours, you're going to be looking at probably $19,000, $20,000 worth of an investment. So that's definitely a big thing that I know for me personally, I wish I had kind of known a little bit more upfront of like how long it would realistically take me. Because if I had saved up a little bit of money, I wouldn't have had the regression that Rachel just talked about in between my lessons, because I was still currently saving back up to be able to do my next lesson.
Definitely. If somebody were to come up to me in Boston, the Boston area, and be like, hey, I'm thinking of learning how to fly an airplane. What should I budget? I would immediately say like $23,000, which is over what Jen just quoted. But things happen, weather happens. You never know. Err on the side of caution with your budgeting, really, because it's aviation. It never really goes how you expect it to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's life too, right? My flight
Yeah.
school, if you put down, I think for every $5,000, you'll get 5% back, I
Got it.
believe.
Oh yeah, that's a block rentals are a thing too, because my flight school, if you paid for they would if you paid 10 hours in advance, you would get a slight discount on the airplanes. Not the instructors, but the airplanes.
We do
So
the same 5%. But like they're 5% back, they just add it on to like your reserve money kind of
yeah.
situation. I think it's over $500. Yeah, it's not like a ton
Yeah.
of money, but it like if you put in a lot over time, that's like a lesson or two. Like it really adds up.
Plus, you have to also, there's a couple, like once you solo, you're not paying that instructor fee. So the more t solo time you get, the less you'll spend on the instructor fee. You'll still have to pay for the airplane, obviously, but like the instructor fee is not there.
Flight
And the ground school
requirement.
stuff, which we sort of talked about, most people now do their online ground school, which is already just the nature of like the videos and how they do it. It already meets your ground school requirement hours wise, and it's a one-time fee as opposed to an hourly thing. So like I used the program that I used was like $300 for my online ground school. It was a one-time fee, paid it. I have lifetime access to it. So if I need to revisit something, I can. It's a cost, but it's not an hourly cost like your flight instruction is.
So I think something we're maybe dancing around is the fact that when you're in flight training, it sounds silly, but you really want to figure out what your budget is. If you
Yes.
have a chunk of money to put down, feel free to do that. Or you need to think about having one last beer on a Friday night. Even like all these little things are really going to add up. But if you're not a person who learned how to budget your money and you're going to try to flight train, you need to take a crash course, talk to somebody that you trust, talk to a banker, do something where you know how to budget so that you maybe don't run into the issues that we've all had where we maybe had to stop for a little bit because we had to save up more money or get a credit card that not everybody's credit is the same. So I'm not sure what everybody would qualify for. And then we're all talking about a Part 61 type school. Those Part 141 schools, they want you to qualify upfront
Yeah,
for.
and it's not all of them, but like some of the big ones, it's a whole you are financing your flight training from your private through your CFI. So they are you take out a loan through them, you get financed through them, the money goes to them directly. If you don't finish, there's a whole process like I like you have to fight either you lose it or you have to fight them whatever the cost is, like whatever the case is to get it back. I think there are some 141 schools that let you do like a pay-as-you-go program, but that's generally not what they want to see because that's not how their program is set up because they have an actual like curriculum and thing that they're going through. 61, the most of them don't care. And there are financing options available. There are a couple places where you can get flight training loans. I cannot remember what any of them are. Off the top of my head, I would have to look. But it feels like a really good time here to also mention that there are a lot of aviation scholarships out there that are available through a bunch of the different organizations that exist. Most of it from your flying clubs that are significantly like more regional or local, up through your national or international organizations do have scholarships available. So that's an option to look into as well.
One thing that I want to talk about, which totally, I guess it does tie in to what you're saying, is that I got a scholarship for ground school and I was pumped because I was like, great, one less thing that I have to pay for. And it was the most horrible ground school. I actually get really upset about it because I didn't know how bad it was
Yeah.
until I started taking practice tests for my written, going, I don't know what they're talking about
Oof.
because my ground school had never covered it.
Oh my
Or it was like super high level, one lesson. And it was like, oh, yeah. And it wasn't in the detail that was needed for those written exams.
God.
And I wasted so much time on it. And so for me, the return on investment, I should have just shelled out whatever $250 for an online ground school that you mentioned and then been really prepared for my written. I mean, fortunately, I passed my written because I did a crap ton of studying for 5 weeks, but it was months that I could have been spending and
Yeah.
also using all of that ground knowledge in my flight lessons and my training. My instructor would ask me questions eventually that should have, indicated way earlier on that I was not getting the ground knowledge that I absolutely should have had, but I wasted a lot of time, and time is money. So get a reputable ground school. Forget these little ones. Oh, like I remember asking, oh, have you ever heard of this ground school? And people were like, no, that should have tipped me off.
I think I
And
remember
then,
that conversation.
yeah. And then when I started proofreading it and
Oh,
sending
right.
errors to the very
I
nice
forgot.
person who made the ground school, I'm not trying to insult anybody, so I'm not going to say what it was, but go with something that a lot of people know.
Yeah.
Well, so.
We can put a list, right? We can get a list together and put them up there.
Like a recommended list or something, yeah. So, what about some of the less obvious or upfront costs, something that you're not going to find on a website? This is how much it takes to,
I have a
fly.
list. Oh
You have a
yeah.
list.
So, and this doesn't include everything. It's definitely there's definitely random stuff that I left off this list, but you're looking at outside of your plane rental and your instructor and your ground school. You're looking at your written test is $175. You have your the cost for your oral and practical exam once you get to your check ride point. So that's on average. I think I paid $800 in Georgia, but I'm seeing upwards of like a $1,200, especially because of the DPE shortage and they're scheduling so far out, and then there's so much demand that they can basically charge whatever they want to. So it's kind of a racket. And then you have, if you're not lucky enough to have a fantastic school that pays for your insurance, like Jen, you're looking at between, it really depends on how much coverage. So when you go to the flight school, they say, this is how much our planes are worth. So this is how much insurance we expect you to cover. So mine is expensive because I was in relatively new planes when I was in New Orleans and I was too lazy to go back and change all of it for wherever. So I'm paying over $500 for my flight and my renter's insurance, non-owner renter insurance.
A
But I
year?
have heard of people. Yes.
Okay. I was like, a month,
Yes.
Rachel,
No, a
girl.
year. No. I think it's 560 or something I paid for this next, and that's on the high side. So it's anywhere from like 190 up to 600 plus, depending, because it depends on type of aircraft and how much coverage and all that kind of stuff. So that's a conversation that you would have with your flight school. You don't need that until you solo, though. So you do have a little bit of time. There's also like accessories, let's call them, for lack of a better word. Obviously, everybody for the most part nowadays has a smartphone. So there's a bunch of apps that you can get that help with your flight training. So the biggest one obviously is 4Flight, which is a like a it's called an EFB, which is an electronic flight bag. There's navigational stuff, there's charts, approach plates, all that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit of everything. And there's three tiers. So however much you spend depends on the tier that you have. And I think the note that I have is that it's anywhere from 120 to 360 annually, depending on which tier you have. For your private, you don't need anything more than the basic plan because you're not using your approach charts. You don't need all that other weather stuff. You can use it on your phone. A lot of us get iPads. So you have to, if you don't have one, you're factoring that cost in. And the mini works best for the most part, but obviously that's personal preference and how you want to work it. So that's, that's a cost. Flight bag, knee board, flashlights, iPhone, iPad mount for wherever you want to put it in there. So all of those are very variable depending on what you get and what you want and what you like. So like you can get a knee board that also fits an iPad. So you can cross off like two birds with one stone in that sense. I don't like my knee board. I don't like knee boards at all. So my iPad is mounted on the window with a suction, the side window with a little suction cup. And that works for me. But that still, that whole system was like $80, I think, for my just the mount. And flight bags is another thing. Sometimes if you go to a school and they sell you like the training kit that has the ground school and it has the books, there might be a flight bag in there. Not always the best quality, but it gets the job done. Otherwise, I think I paid $100 for my flight bag. And that seems to be about average. But then the big one is headsets.
So, Rachel, I'm going to pause you right there. I'm going to kind of I want to ask a couple of things about
Yep.
the items that you listed.
Okay.
Before we actually started recording, we were talking about the iPad mount that you
Yes.
have, which
Oh,
goes on
yeah.
the window. And Jen, yours is a bit different. It goes on the yoke.
Yeah, so it's got like a little claw that clips onto the yoke right behind the actual like yoke part
The
like on the
plastic
metal.
piece or whatever.
Yeah. So I really like mine because it's adjustable and you can kind of move it out of the way of the six pack in the planes.
The six pack being the gauges and such for who might not be flying.
That's my preferred way. So it's right in front of me. I am a knee board girly, so I
Me
also have a knee
too.
board.
It's definitely
Jen,
me.
I don't know if you remember how much that cost you, that little
The
mount.
knee, oh, the mount. So I bought one that it's from the brand Ram, and it
That's what
was
mine is too.
probably $100, and it broke. And
Oh no.
when my instructor went to the airlines, she gave me hers, and that's one I currently have that is significantly better. It just has like a slide latch. Mine had like all these little arms that like gripped it, and it was
Yeah.
awful. The
I should
iPad
have
fell
told
out of
you.
it. It just.
The brand name of the one that you have now, maybe we could add to like a recommended items list on our website. And then I did invest in a mini iPad for training.
Yeah, I love
And
mine.
yet I don't use it for a for flight because I started using like paper charts and everything because I was told that you would be quizzed on a lot of things about the for flight program. And so I said, oh, I'll just, stick with really
Archaic charts.
these like
That's not
really
fair. They're
this
not. They're fun.
basic technology like pencils and
Well,
rulers.
Paper. They update every 56 days, so they
Yep.
are current.
Yeah,
That's
it's
also
so
a
annoying.
cost. They're like $9 every time you
The
get
paper
them.
charts,
And it's
yeah.
so wasteful for the environment, but that's a whole other thing.
But
I
I'm
did my
also going
entire
to.
private on paper, and then once I had my license, I switched over to an iPad. But
Yeah,
I
that's.
keep like a somewhat recent chart
Yeah.
in my
I
bag. Like I'll buy one every couple months, so there's like something fresh in there.
So I don't know if we're being clear on all these kind of terms that we're throwing around. We really try hard to explain what we're talking about paper charts and stuff. Just, if you're just starting out or if you're not an aviation enthusiast just yet, just know that we're basically talking about the difference between literal paper and software.
A paper map that you would like shove in your glove box versus a GPS, like Waze kind of deal.
Rachel, you talked about headsets, and I joke about it all the time, but it is true. I always think of Jen as the headset guru. So please, Jen, tell us about the headsets that you know about.
Yeah, I personally got probably 4 or 5 lessons in and knew that this was something I was going to stick with. So I went and invested in a headset. I went with the Lightspeed Sierras, and that was just from recommendations from my flight instructor. He had really recommended sticking with either the Bose, Lightspeed, or like the David Clarks. At the time, I did not have the $1,100 to go buy Bose headsets. I do really like them. I've heard great things. They too have, like, I think the tangle-free cords, which is pretty cool. But I personally didn't see the value in it when the Lightspeeds that I was able to actually try on, and they were $650 when I bought them. I think they're right around $700 right now, had the exact same features, and they were just as comfortable. And I think they had a really good warranty. So that's what I went with. My flight school did have a bunch of pairs of headsets available. They were all a little bit older model David Clarks that didn't have the active noise reduction, which I really wanted, which is why I went with the Lightspeeds. But you could take those for free. And I know that a lot of flight schools maybe like will have you sign them out and then you just bring them back. They might not always be in the best shape because of every student's using them. They get a little beat up over time.
Yeah, to your point, Jen, I borrowed a headset for 9 months before I bought one.
I don't think you ever really do need to buy one unless you decide that you want one. I know most flight schools will have them available. So if you just continue to keep renting, that could be somewhere where you save yourself a good amount of money. But also there's pretty good headsets anywhere from like 100 and like 50 all the way up through like 1200 now. So there's a pretty wide range of costs you could spend. So that's really a variable spot.
Oh, it definitely is. I have the ASA headsets that I think I got on Amazon for like $136, and they've served me well, but they're definitely not the same class as the higher end models, but they get the job done, and they mean that I didn't have to use the flight school headset, so.
One thing that I know I did too when I was looking was I asked my flight instructor and a few other people who had headsets at the airport if I could try them on. And then when we had one of our student pilot group meetups, I brought my headset to try to convert everyone to come to the Lightspeed side of the family. And we had everyone try them on because they're so comfortable. And that was my
They
little
were.
rep
And it
moment.
worked, everybody. I became a believer. I put them on. I was like, I love these. I made a plan. It worked. That's I
good
love it.
marketing, Jen. So one of the things that a lot of people didn't warn me about was that, like, the headband on the headset, my hair got caught in them all the time. So you either need to think about that when you look at the brand of headset that you're going to buy, or you have to invest in a hat, knit hat, baseball hat, like anything that you're going to wear over your head, a really thick headband or like a scarf. But I was really sick of pulling out my hair every time I took off my headset.
My
Yeah.
only
Yeah.
beef with the light speeds is that I always wear glasses and I tend to like thicker glasses. If they pop the light speeds off a little bit, that can be annoying.
Oh, yeah.
But I actually just got a new pair of sunglasses that have nice thin arms. There's a bunch of aviation ones that you could look into. They're very expensive. But also, if you Like
buy
everything else in
sunglasses,
aviation.
yeah. If you buy sunglasses for aviation, make sure they are non-polarized because otherwise you will be on the struggle bus. You'll catch the propeller moving and it can be very annoying.
It's gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt your eyes. We all have a headset that we like. And Rachel, you're gonna
Or
invest
tolerate.
soon? Okay. Right. And you wanna make sure that you bring along some extra batteries. If you have that active noise canceling, just throw them in your headset bag or something like that. Rachel, you had talked about a flashlight, which for night flying, you really need.
You do. And ideally, you would have one that can do both regular, like clear white light and red, because you do not, there is nothing worse than pre-flighting the airplane. You're used to the dark, and then somebody lands and there's white light in your face, and you lose all of your night vision. They also make, you might laugh, but the like headlamp thing, listen, it's a look, all right? But it's worth it. Get a headset, get a headlight. We're gonna call it minor chic, and that's what we're gonna go for.
So
Minor
we've
chic.
talked mostly about private, but if you think of projections as you guys are in well into your instrument ratings, have there been additional costs other than the cost of flying?
Just the
100%.
upgraded four flight, really.
So for me personally, I definitely upgraded my four flight, and then I went and got the little special tool that goes along with four flight, the little Sentry that
Oh.
gives you active weather
Yes.
updates and active traffic in the cockpit. It connects to your iPad. It has been my favorite investment that I have made in my own flying.
Yeah.
It was my kind of gift to myself when I got my private. And then I do have an AOPA membership, which I highly recommend. It's the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. And when I got my private, I upgraded that to include their pilot protection services, which is lawyer services for general aviation pilots. So you get that included if you ever have any kind of like FAA stuff come up, like you bust into a Charlie or you bust a Bravo and you have to give them a call, and you can talk to a lawyer before you go talk to the FAA and make sure you're prepared for those kind of conversations. And I really think that I haven't had to use it yet, but I like knowing it's there.
Good safety net.
Seems staggering the way that we have talked about it. A lot of things that are of value have a really high cost associated with them, and aviation is no different. It will give you either, the hobby that you absolutely love in your life or a new career. It's going to open a lot of opportunities for you, and you don't have to do it in, you don't have to look at the calendar and mark off an expiration date. You have time. So, you know, there we've given you some tips along the way, but just you don't want to feel like I didn't know anything about this. What did I get myself into? And think, oh, which, as we talked about in our last episode, it's really good to feel like all of your questions are answered and that there's nothing kind of lurking in the shadows that's gonna jump up and bite you when it comes to costs in your training. So we hope that this episode has been very helpful. If you would like, we have been talking about this. We would love for you to write us an email. If you have any questions about today's episode or any of our past episodes, you could write us at podchat@agirlseyeview.com. You can visit our website. We're going to be updating the website with some recommended products that we like or that we've heard are good, some reputable things. Can you guys think of anything else before we end our episode today?
I think we kind of freaked everybody out and covered all
Yeah.
the
I can't think of any more expensive things to add to people's
Yeah, right.
wallets, so.
All right. Well, we thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of A Girl's Eye View, and we hope that you'll join us next week, Sunday, when our next episode comes out at 7 p.m. And until then, have a good time looking at things from a girl's eye view. As a reminder, the views and opinions shared during this podcast are those of the hosts alone. We do not represent the views of the FAA, our flight schools, or our employers. This podcast is purely for entertainment. We are not qualified flight instructors. We are just here to share our experiences.